You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at wicn.org. Good evening, I'm Al Vohner, and this is this week's edition of The Public Eye. So glad to have you with us. So much, especially in the political realm over the last few decades, people who were born back in the 50s and 60s, I think sometimes are shocked by what happens and how quickly information passes through, dialogues altering back and forth. So much of what we took for granted 30 and 40 years ago has become commonplace today, and what I'm talking about is when individuals are easily tainted by the internet, people working behind the scenes, various groups wanting to put their ideas forward. And I don't think there's enough dialogue about that, but that's what we'll be talking about for the next half hour. My guest is CNN correspondent and author Ellie Reeve. Her new book is Black Pill, and it really is a clear and concise book on the topic of what happens when the internet plays a very crucial role in influencing various groups. Many of us have seen this happen. Those who stormed the Capitol last year, arguing that the election was rigged, this, that, and the other thing. So for the next half hour, we'll be talking with Ellie Reeve and getting her insight. First of all, she was on the ground that day and certainly has plenty of that insight. Ellie, nice to have you with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
I don't care where you are on the age spectrum. I think we've all have to come to some conclusion that the internet is, one, here to stay. It is a force to be reckoned with. It is something that can easily put forth any and all information in spite of barriers, in spite of guidelines, this, that, and the other thing. There's always a way of somebody or some group getting their message out. But more importantly, and this talks, you talk about this in Black Pill, in doing your research, were you shocked, were you surprised in any way that the internet could influence vast numbers of people to take drastic actions?
Well, I used to believe, I was more of an optimist, that the internet just reflected human behavior and people's thoughts. But now I don't see it that way anymore. I do think this sort of anonymous, collective hive mind can shape human behavior. It changes our ideas. It makes us more susceptible to conspiracy theories and more radical ideas. So that was the big shock to me. I profiled the white nationalists, and one of the most revealing interviews for me was an old school neo-Nazi from the 90s who had explained to me how hard he had to work to become an extremist. He had to write letters to these P.O. boxes of different extremist groups and wait for them to respond to him with old mimeographed copies of their literature. That doesn't happen anymore. You can just go on Amazon and buy Mein Kampf.
It's really scary, but going deeper on what you were talking about, are these individuals, I mean, you think, go and get a job, don't you have a job, do something, but what type of, I guess what I'm trying to say is, give me a sense of what kind of a person takes the time and uses the energy to put forth whatever ideology they have, and at the same token is able to convince so many others that either the government or a particular country's way of life is entirely wrong, and we have to stand together, shoulder to shoulder, and do something about this. What is it that drives these people?
With the fascist, incel, white nationalist groups, it's largely young men who feel alienated. They're not poor. They're not uneducated. They're often very smart. And in fact, their intelligence is very central to their identity. So I've had many of them come up to me and tell me what they believe their IQ to be. One even sent me like an actual physical proof of an IQ test they had taken. So I think that's really important because people tend to dismiss the threat of these groups because they say, those are just like dumb idiots in some faraway state I've never been to. They're poor and they're all dying out. They're old. And that's just not true. Now, with QAnon, which was a conspiracy theory that fueled a lot of the movement towards the Capitol, that was a much broader group of people. And, you know, I was there at the Capitol that day, and what was so striking to me is seeing people who, honestly, there was a woman who looked like she could be my aunt, you know, just like a physically fit older woman, clearly had money, had nice clothes, and her face was just twisted up with rage. She had been captured by these ideas and in the moment believed she was doing the right thing with trying to break into the Capitol.
That's frightening. As you said, people who've either had a good upbringing, well-educated, well-versed, have money, probably have a decent social life, can be impacted in such a way. But going back, here's the thing that really caught me when this all came before across my desk, Black Pill. You use that as the title of the book, very apropos, by the way. Black Pill, I want to get your sense, but let me give you what my take on all this is if you take this Black Pill, then you are part of us. You are part of an organization. We own you. We've taken over your mind, and now you will follow us. Is that extreme?
It's kind of like that. So it comes from the movie The Matrix in the 90s, where the hero is presented a choice, a blue pill or a red pill, right? He takes the blue pill. He still lives in this computer simulation of the 90s. It's paradise. Takes the red pill, he sees the truth, which is that humans have become food for machines. We're in this post-apocalyptic disaster. And so the red pill has become a metaphor for taking far-right ideology and believing it to be true. From that came like all these different other ideas. You know, you see people talking about being coconut-pilled as in supporter of Kamala Harris. What the concept that I think is most important is to be black-pilled, which is this like nihilism that our society is collapsing, that liberalism is spent, as Peter Thiel said recently, that maybe democracy isn't working out, as he also said recently. Elon Musk said that Kamala Harris was an extinctionist, like she wanted to end the human race. It's this apocalyptic thinking that, and I can't speak for the actions they want to take, but it gives you permission to do extreme things or immoral things, take immoral action, take extreme action, because you want to hasten the collapse of this decaying society, because then you can bring forth something new to be rebuilt. That's the attitude I saw in many, many, many of the fascists that I interviewed, young people who believe, you know, there would be violence in the streets and it would be necessary to bring about a revolution for a better society.
And that's the frightening part of all of this. And you point out in the book, and I want to get your sense on this, that the most vulnerable to these online sites are young white males who feel disenfranchised, not popular in school, maybe not great athletes, shunned by women. You clearly point all of that out. What does that say about society, Elle? That's really, we have to go back a couple of steps and trace what this is, where this is all coming from. Why do we have such a disenfranchisement among young males, not only here in this country, but across the globe?
So there's an idea that I think that I hear a lot, which is that they feel like they were promised something and now they have to compete against people of color and women, and they're unhappy about that. And I don't think that's quite true I don't think that that's their internal model. That's why I think it's really important to talk to them and listen to what they say. And what a lot of them tell me is that they don't know how to be men. Like one man said to me, name one positive masculine trait. He's like, you can't say brave or strong because then it's like implying that women are brave or strong. Because you can't say dominant or aggressive because that's supposedly toxic masculinity. He saw no way to be a man in this society that was positive. And this the same time, like, instead of trying to, like, construct a new kind of masculinity, but, like, this is a smart guy who's good at computers, like, he could have had a normal life. This isn't someone who is, like, cursed by his birth to, you know, live at the bottom of society, as he believes. And he blamed women, right? He felt like he was weak like a woman, and so, therefore, women had made him weak. And he was very, very angry at women for, like, imposing their femininity on him. He felt restricted and constrained and stuck.
That in itself, I mean, I think you've encapsulated in a nutshell what is going on, not only in this country, but across the globe. And it is very frightening because, as you said, you know, we're not talking about destitute people. We're talking about, in many cases, educated people, came from good, you know, upbringing, and just feel so left out or feel victims, you know, to changes. Unfortunately, you know, many of us would like to keep certain things that we're familiar with in our life, that we're comfortable. I guess we get into our comfort zone, and then when it's disrupted, or when there's a change or upheaval, unable to deal with that. I want to take a quick pause before we come right back. You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. This is The Public Eye. I'm Al Vona, your host. My guest this week is CNN correspondent and bestselling author Ellie Reeve. Her new book is Black Pill, and we're talking about the onslaught of rhetoric that permeates across the internet, influencing specifically specific groups. In this particular case, a lot of times disenfranchised males who feel, from various reasons, that they, the things they were promised, the things that they had hoped for, the things that they'd always heard about, are not coming their way, and that they must do something about it. And Ellie, that goes back to, you know, what started that, the January 6th attack down on the Capitol, and so many other episodes across the country, across the globe, if you will. This tells me, and I want to get your sense on this, tells me that this is just the beginning. This is the springboard for what may become the norm, that any changes in societal values or ideas will cause a tremendous upheaval. And now millions can be reached instantaneously by any particular individual or group who feels that they want to amass a following to fight back. Is that sound a little too futuristic? Does that sound a little too fatal? Or is this?
No, I don't think so. I think it's an emergency. People have to take action if they don't want this kind of thing to take over. A really good example recently is, or still is going on in the UK. So, and this is, I think this pattern of events is repeated over and over. So it's really important to pay attention to. So there was a terrible attack on children in Southlake in the UK. A man stabbed several children. Three of them died. So that's a real thing that happened, right? But these bad actors, including some fascist groups, some longtime anti-Muslim activists, took this event and they were able to sort of ride it to gin up the much broader population than that would normally find them. So they circulated a lot of misinformation that the person who attacked the children was a migrant. That's not true. He was born in the UK. But that whipped up a lot of this anti-immigrant sentiment. And so there have been riots, like actually violent protests over this event. And the police, like, it's one of the most interesting things in the reporting is that the police don't quite know how to track these protests because they don't know where they started. They're so stuck in thinking that a group is like geographically located and it takes a while to organize and create an event, which that's not necessary anymore. You can just send out a little image with a message like "show up here" and it'll rocket around social media and people will show up for it.
Hmm. Go ahead.
I saw something similar in 2020 for a very different cause, right? We're in Portland. There were protests against police violence. But among these groups, an image would circulate. It would just like be a picture and say protest, and it would say the date and time, and people would show up for it. But it was viral, and it was never clear who called for that protest. Who was the original person who made the image? And sometimes these protests would sort of devolve because, you know, they'd picked a bad place or it wasn't good, and there would be infighting over who had done this. Was there some kind of subterfuge? Was someone trying to ruin the protest? And it speaks to the way that people believe whatever they or have a tendency to believe, whatever they read on the internet, and they don't question, you know, once there's this feeling of momentum and anger and outrage around an event, they don't question the people that they're trusting online. And they absolutely should do so because there are often bad actors among them.
Yeah, excellent point. I mean, I grew up in an era where, sure, there were differences of opinion. Many times you would find the spokesperson or a spokesperson, or even as yourself, you know this better than anybody, correspondents debating an issue back and forth. I mean, back in the 60s, it was black and white TV. It was Walter Cronkite and a few others. But it was civil, L. You know, there was no, this vitriolic language, these you know, negative pulses that really rile people. But it all goes back to a trend. And you know, I thought you might say otherwise, but I think you're speaking the truth in the fact that this is here to stay. How we combat it, how we deal with it, remains a very big question. But something else I want to get your sense on this. You know, growing up, when I grew up, it was Democrats and Republican Party, period. And you were either staunchly loyal to one or the other. There are so many splinter groups out there as today, as you know. And then you have this influx of negativity over the web. Does that bother you that we will never be cohesive, not only as a people, but as separate nations? We'll find fault with any government, any leader at this point. And then my biggest fear is the fact that we'll see total breakdown of society. Is that too extreme?
Well, I don't know about total breakdown, but let me start with part of your question, which is that at this point, it's very hard to be a leader of a political movement because your online followers are able to give instant feedback, and you step outside of what they want and they will attack you. I found this among white nationalists, that they were very much afraid of their own followers. Sometimes they would say to me, like, listen, I can talk to you off the record, but I can't be seen talking to you because the movement, as they called it, the movement is mad at you, and they'll revolt against me if they know that I'm talking to you. Likewise, we've read about Republican politicians being afraid of their own voters. Mitt Romney spoke at length about needing to hire security because he was afraid that he would be attacked for voting for the impeachment of Donald Trump. We're in this like strange position where, the way I put it in for the alt-right, at least, is that the cult controls the leader. The leader doesn't control the cult. You know, Richard Spencer may be one of the most famous white nationalists, although he's now denounced that for a while. He complained to me bitterly that what they wanted was a dancing monkey. And so I think that's really important because, you know, the leader can put brakes on most extreme parts of a movement, or at least they could. I think it's a lot more difficult to do that now. And then secondly, you know, these tech companies, these social media platforms, I think they need to accept they have a moral and ethical responsibility for what's on their platforms. Maybe they don't have a legal responsibility for it yet, although there are some people who want to change that. But they have a moral responsibility for what happens. And I could just sit idly by and say, well, that's just free speech.
Yeah, that's interesting because I think that is the root of all the problems. But you know, Ellie, I mean, I've been a small business owner myself, and you know, day to day, you need revenue, you need to make money, you hope that, you know, the challenges, I mean, the risks you've taken to get where you are, is worth any price. So I think it would be very difficult, as you said, whether it be legally or morally, to get these people to, damper down on what's being put on their platforms when they see tremendous, response to these people. And that's just driving, more eyeballs. More eyeballs means more people seeing this. Advertisers are more likely to utilize those platforms. And then what I'm saying, Elle, is it all comes down to one thing at the end of the day, money, right?
True. That's true. But I'll give you a counter example, which is these companies are actually pretty good. They could be a lot better, but they are pretty good at responding to child sexual abuse material, what is commonly called child pornography.
Mm-hmm.
There is a massive system in America where one of those images is put up, even on the most obscure website, like it is found and they are told to put it down. And those companies do respond and take down that content because the risk of punishment from the government is so severe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, hate speech is legally protected speech. It is constitutionally protected speech in America.
Right.
So, it's the government is not going to say you can't put a swastika. At least our government's not. The German government will. So what I'm saying is that these tech companies do have the power, when they're sufficiently motivated, to control and moderate the worst of the content out there. It's just they need to have... The question is whether they have the motivation to control this extreme of content that is leading to so much instability in our society.
Right. Very good point. Going back to something that you had touched upon earlier, I personally have come across individuals here in my region of the world who have I don't know whether they went on the internet, whether anything, where the influence came from, or whether this was just a mindset that has been there for years and is just starting to manifest itself. People have come up and said, "Are you prepared?" I'm thinking, for what? for the weather? Yeah. No. Armageddon. Literally had one gentleman say to me, "Armageddon." He says, "I want to show you my cellar. I'm all stocked. I'm ready to go." And I'm thinking, what are you talking about? I've never heard that kind of talk before. And I just, going back to what you were talking about, it wouldn't take much for a very, for someone who's, who can, put across their point in such a way that hits a certain nerve. And then before you know it, you've got an advocate on your side. You've got a recruit, and then it just snowballs. Which gives me the chills, because I wonder how much longer before, where will the next violence take place? Who will be, what innocent people will be hurt by all of this? So in the few moments that we have left, let me ask you this. Who has the most responsibility at this point? I know we talked about internet companies themselves, and you talked about that they're getting better with their with their ability to pull offensive stuff off the web. Government is talking about things. There may be some bills and committees, but nothing has really come before up for a vote. But where does it all rest with, Ellie? Does it start with the government? Should the government be the lead on all of this?
No, I think regular people. The only time I've ever been able to predict anything that was going to happen was when I saw there were lots of numbers. Lots of different disparate people were going to show up in Charlottesville. Lots of different sources that I had who didn't know each other were going to show up in Jan 6. That's how I knew there would be a big event in those places. And likewise, the only way to counter that is regular people standing up to it. So a story I've also followed is these efforts to ban books in many schools, but it's very strong in Florida. And Moms for Liberty and associated groups, they made a lot of advances in Florida to make it very easy to get a book pulled from the shelves, classics by Toni Morrison. And when I went last fall, the school board meetings, there was a massive number of people who showed up against it. People of all different stripes, not just educated elite people, but working class people, like just regular people who showed up and said, "This is too far. Like,
right.
You've gone too far. I don't like you're doing. We don't ban books in America."
Right.
And I think that's really important. So it's showing up in your local government. It's showing up in schools. And also, it's talking to those people with the apocalyptic point of view. Like, you know, there's this, like, cliche of, like, oh, your drunk uncle at Thanksgiving, and sort of, like, shunning people who've gone down an extreme path. And no, like, I'm sorry, maybe it's unpleasant, but it actually is your responsibility to be talking to that person and be their connection to the regular world. Be the person who says, you know, I don't think America's going to collapse. I don't think this is the worst anything the world has ever been. I definitely would rather live now than before there was penicillin. You know, you need to be that rock of reality for that person in your life.
Yeah. Yeah, I think most people would agree with you. The question becomes, you know, when you get up every morning, I've got to go out and work. I work. I've got to earn a living. I've got a family. I've got to keep a roof over my head. I think the web in general, or the new forms of communication, along with everything else, has added such stress to people's lives. Which may make them more vulnerable. So when you do get these extremists to go online and search for converts, they just out of desperation, just out of frustration, some people just said, hey, okay, fine. But I'm glad to hear that there is still some brightness out there, some light at the end of the tunnel, where people are standing up. And I think at the end of the day, you're right. People have to make the big difference in all of this. We've got a few moments left, so let me ask you. It sounds like, but I want to hear it from you personally. That in spite of the things that you've witnessed, you know, you've been there right on the ground. First and foremost, you've interviewed people, you've talked to people, you've seen extreme actions in people. Are you confident whatever is taking place today? That people will come to their senses and realize that, you know, we've got a short time on this earth. We need to live cohesively. We need to, be tolerant of one another, but we don't need extremism. Are you confident?
Like everyone, I have dark moods. So there are moments, as I write about in the book, where I wonder, like, are they going to win? Are the bad guys going to win? People who want to end democracy, are they going to win? But in general, I do have faith that regular people are able to, like, they don't have a majority, and they will never have a majority. And I believe that Americans will step up and take action to stop the worst extremes from taking over. I really do believe that. But regular people have to act.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's comforting to hear that from you, because you do this for a living. You travel extensively. You're on the ground with many of these events. You're listening to the people and to hear that you still have an optimistic side. I think gives people hope, that at the end of the day, rational thinking and, people being, human beings and reaching out for one another and taking care of one another really is what counts most. Elle, if people want to get, the book is widely available. Black Pill is widely available. It's really been gaining momentum. Many people are picking it up, reading it. So that's the first thing. But if people wanted to just pose maybe some questions to you, get more information about you and your background, is there a website or a way they can reach out to you?
I'm at Twitter/X at Elspethreev, ELSPETHREEVE. And, of course, you can email me at CNN, le.reeve@cnn.com.
There you go. There's the invitation. So hopefully people will take heed of that and follow up with Elsie's putting it out there. The book is Black Pill. My guest has been the author, CNN correspondent Elle Reeve. I want to thank her so much. If there's any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments or questions to me directly as well. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For the public eye, this is Al Vona.